Oh, they spotted something.
Oh, 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 there.
Ah, there you see that?
Oh, yeah. I'm getting goosebumps.
I'm Shushan, and I've been discovering the hidden plants and animals of Singapore.
He's just looking at us with his eyes wide open. Oh, it's so cute.
Sadly, more than 1,000 of them are on the edge of extinction.
One thing particularly worrying is that we're getting rare threatened species as roadkill.
You lose one, and there is a trickle-down effect on everything downstream.
More forests will be cleared for our needs. And as that happens, the habitats of our wildlife are slowly being chipped away. In this episode, I meet the people working tirelessly to save our biodiversity.
We're so excited about collecting poop.
How much time do we have left? And what does it take to save a species from going extinct?
What we're looking at in front of us is a forest that is slowly dying.
Basically, yeah.
This is possibly the earliest time I've ever been awake. And I'm off once again to spend my morning in the company of birds.
I don't even think the birds are awake yet.
The last time I went bird watching, it was a full-on 5-hour neck-straining experience.
Tell me what I should be looking out for.
So I'm glad that this time I get to do so from the comfort of this buggy.
What's that?
You have the imperial pigeons here.
Oh, wow.
I'm here to learn about a breeding program for a bird that's critically endangered around the world, the straw-headed bulbul. Once easily found across Southeast Asia, their numbers are now inching dangerously close to extinction. And it's all because of this. Their melodic birdsong. Songbirds are popular pets in countries like Indonesia and Malaysia. In Thailand, they've already been hunted to extinction, which makes Singapore the last stronghold. We house a fifth of the entire population in our wild. We're also the only place in Asia to have successfully bred them in captivity. And it's all thanks to Manoj. He's been breeding them since 2016, and today, we're kicking off this year's mating season by gathering nesting materials for the birds.
Oh, that's a fern.
Oh, this?
Yep. This is a dragon scale fern. So what the birds will do is they will use this and then they'll make like a circle shape. So then they'll build the bottom of the nest, like the base. So I've tried giving them artificial nest baskets. They usually just throw the nesting materials out of the basket. So after going to the wild to study for like a week or so, I realized that they only specifically use this. So I just tried to mimic the entire situation back in bird park, and it actually worked out. They bred. And the amazing thing is, the straw-headed bulbul is the only species of bird that actually uses this fern. Breeding them is not an easy task, to be honest.
How do you ensure that the conditions are right for the bulbuls to mate?
The straw-headed bulbul is super fussy. You've got to make sure the foliage in the aviary is super dense. You've got to give them specific perches to make sure they hang upside down. And breeding them is super important because they're critically endangered species. So we need to increase the population of birds under human care.
Okay, so is this enough?
Yeah, this is more than enough.
All right, let's go. How can you tell whether the birds actually like each other?
They would start feeding each other and just engaging in loud duets. So a male would sing a different song and a female would sing a different song. These are the materials that the straw-headed bulbul will be using to build their nest. I'll be going in to scatter these materials.
Today marks the first day of the bulbul mating season. There are currently 6 pairs in this enclosure. Once they find their mate, the lovebirds will start building their nests using these ferns and coconut husks. Manoj is hoping for 4 to 8 chicks this year.
So I'm staying outside here because we've been told that the straw-headed bulbul are a very shy species of bird.
Guess the birds just lose their mojo with people watching, huh?
Last year, these birds produced two chicks, a huge win for conservation efforts. But to sustain a critically endangered species, much more will have to be done. I will be back in 2 months when the birds are expected to start building their nests to see if this year's breeding program will take flight. The bulbul is just one of many species in Singapore that is critically endangered. Our extinction rate here is much higher than the global average, and that's largely due to the pace at which we urbanized. In the past, we used to have giant squirrels, tigers, and possibly even elephants amongst us.
And it's just a really unnerving feeling knowing that somewhere down the road, the animals that we have today may only exist behind glass, like what we're seeing here.
We may not be able to bring back what's extinct, but we can try to preserve those remaining. And that is what Jim has been tasked to do with creatures like this little guy. It took a while to spot him. See him there?
This is a very pretty little creature. It's the cinnamon bush frog. It's lovely. It's the colour of otak otak.
It's such right, a nice, so, bright orange colour.
It is. And it's a fascinating little creature.
Jim oversees the National Parks Board's Nature Conservation Master Plan, which includes a species recovery program to save our endangered plants and animals. There are 55 species on the list.
For animals, we have this frog. We also have Singapore freshwater crab. We have a small dragonfly, the harlequin butterfly, the Sunda leaffish. We also have a couple of mammals, including the Sunda slow loris.
How do we decide what to save?
They must be native to Singapore. Another thing that basically puts them at the top of the priority list is that if they are endemic, which means that if they are found nowhere else but in Singapore, the third criteria, of course, is how rare they are.
The cinnamon bush frog is one such example. Around the world, they're losing their habitats extensively due to deforestation. And in Singapore, they're only known to live in a few spots. To help the species populate, the frogs are moved to places where they're less commonly found. Today, we're going to be releasing this little fella into its new home, where hopefully it will find a mate to start reproducing.
Okay, here we have a very nice log.
Your brand new home! How urgent is species recovery?
We really, really don't know at this point in time how species interrelate. So it could even be, you know, a butterfly effect. If you lose one small species, you never know what it will result in the long term to the health of a forest stream. But having said that, what we have found, much to our surprise, is that species are really resilient. So we just need to give them half a chance and they'll do very well.
What are some of the challenges you face in doing species recovery?
These animals, they are found in jungles and forests. And so the researchers literally have to bash into the forest sometimes, wake up at odd hours of the night, just to go and observe these creatures.
And that's exactly what one woman has spent her entire career doing. Not to find creatures, but to look for rare plants. Yana has searched the world for new plant species. And it was here, in Singapore, that she found a plant so rare, it doesn't exist anywhere else in the world.
Hello.
Today, she's taking me to see this plant.
You will be hunting for the famous Singapore ginger.
Lead the way.
The Singapore ginger is only found deep in our forests. As a plant researcher with NParks, Yana makes trips like these twice a month to check on them. But locating the Singapore ginger is no easy feat.
The plants all look alike, and I can't even tell left from right in this jungle. It's really like finding a needle in a haystack.
This is one of our larger clumps, larger colonies of the Singapore ginger.
Is this the ginger right here?
No, this is a palm. This is a ginger. You know, same, same, but different.
I'm really starting to appreciate how difficult it has been to find this Singapore ginger, Yana.
Yeah.
If, like me, you're wondering what all the fuss is about, well, it's what lies beneath that excites scientists. Because it's not just any ordinary ginger that you'd see in the market.
What is so special about this ginger plant?
Well, firstly, it's a member of genus Zingiberia, which is a high-potential genus. Many other species from this genus are actually medicinal plants. They have a healing properties. So we definitely would like to look in the future if Singapore ginger has any of these compounds inside. Of course, we can't do this now because we do not have enough of the rhizoma material for such analysis.
Even if we were to lose this species of ginger in our forest, what difference does one less species make?
It's never about losing just one species because all the species are intertwined. You lose one and there is a trickle-down effect on everything downstream.
Today, we'll be collecting some cuttings of the ginger plant, which will be brought back to the lab.
I feel like I'm robbing a forest of national treasures, Yana.
No, you are actually going to propagate it. From each of these stems, we will have hundreds of babies.
And how time-sensitive is it to get these back to the lab?
Oh, this is like sashimi. The fresher, the better.
Out here in the forest, these rare ginger plants are vulnerable. Something as simple as a tree fall could wipe out an entire ginger colony. Which is why Yana and her team are racing against time to multiply their numbers.
Okay, so here you can see the different periods of their growth. And the moment they reach certain size, they are actually ready to be kicked out of their five-star hotel where they get all the nutrients, light and moisture 24/7. Take your forceps, just slide it up.
While there may be hundreds of cuttings here in the lab, more studies on these plants need to be done in controlled environments like this before they're transplanted back into the wild.
So you can water it.
And not every cutting will survive.
The 180th Singapore ginger plant.
So for now, the Singapore ginger remains critically endangered.
And because it doesn't grow anywhere else, so Singapore is completely responsible for keeping this species on this planet.
The Singapore ginger is not the only plant that's endemic to Singapore. In fact, we house 5 species of plants that are found only in Singapore and nowhere else in the world. They're all found in our tropical rainforests. But some of these forests that lie outside our nature reserves are not protected from deforestation. And based on URA plans, almost half of that could be converted into other land uses in the next 10 to 15 years. So as more of our forests get chopped down, I find out what else we stand to lose.
Ah, did you see something? Sharp eye.
I've discovered that our tropical rainforests are home to some rare and endangered wildlife. But as more forests get cleared to build our homes, we're also robbing our wildlife of theirs.
Morning, ladies! Morning!
Today, I'm meeting someone who's been trying to save an animal that's already lost most of its habitat. And it's one of just 3 primates we have left. The Raffles Bandit Langur. Up until the 1920s, the langurs could be found from Tampines to Bukit Timah and even Tuas. But rapid deforestation caused the langurs to retreat into one spot. Today, they're confined to the Central Catchment Nature Reserve. Of the 300 that are left in the wild globally, 67 are found here. So you could say our nature reserve is one of the last bastions of the langurs.
You think we're going to be spotting lots of langurs?
They're very rare and shy. But if we don't, we might find their poop. So that's when we'll collect the poop and do some analysis on it.
A field trip to pick up poop? Not quite what I was expecting. Andy and her field partner do this at least 4 times a week, for 6 hours each time. And yet, they spot the langurs only 50% of the time.
So any last tips and tricks to be looking out for this poop?
Smell.
Smell, of course. Did you see something? Sharp eyes.
Okay, so don't step. We will put it into the tubes. Oh my goodness, it's so soft. Oh, you can smell it? Not yet, I'm not exactly trying to smell it either.
Shortly after, we spot a second sample.
Yeah, just try not to get it on my hand.
Okay.
We're so excited about collecting poop.
Because it's so rare. To find 2 in 1 day, that's really, really lucky. Oh, there's a snail here.
You know what? Never in my life would I have imagined getting so excited about picking up someone else's shit.
The poop collected is brought to the NUS Evolutionary Biology Lab, where Dr. Amrita extracts and analyzes DNA strands from the samples Andy provides.
What does all this data actually tell you about the langurs?
It has DNA from the plants the monkey has consumed. It has DNA from parasites that are present in its gut. It has DNA from bacteria, and it has the monkey's own DNA. What we want to do is now isolate the DNA of the monkey. And we process the data to start comparing so different individuals of monkeys. And then we assemble them into a mitochondrial genome. And what it essentially looks like is this.
This chart compares the DNA of 3 different langurs. And it doesn't show much variety at all. That spells trouble. It means inbreeding is rife among the langurs in Singapore, which could result in a sickly and unhealthy population. So what scientists have discovered is that we need to increase the number of langurs to expand the genetic pool. And we'll also need more forests to house a larger population. That's why someone like ecologist Sean Lum wants to preserve as much of our green cover as he can. And few people know Singapore's forests the way he does.
Can you name the town and MRT station that has the name of this tree?
Can you give me a clue?
Okay, east-west, so...
Tampines?
Yeah. Yay! This Tampines.
This is a Tampines tree. Yeah. Okay.
How many times more species do we have in this forest than Canada and the UK combined?
In this forest alone?
In this forest, yeah.
I'm just going to go for the most extreme answer. I'm going to say 3 times.
Yeah, it's 3 to 4 times. That's how diverse the tropics are. And even a small place like Singapore can still retain that kind of diversity.
The forest that we're in lies within the Central Catchment Nature Reserve. It houses some of our richest species of wildlife. But 15 minutes into our walk...
Is that a golf course on the other side?
Yeah, yes it is.
The forest comes to an abrupt end.
So have a look. This used to be forested once upon a time.
Why is it significant that the forest ends here? I mean, we still have another patch of forest on the other side.
When a forest is fragmented, what you do is sometimes end up separating populations of plants and animals from each other. So it might seem like the distance from here across the reservoir is pretty trivial. And yes, for some species, they're able to cross these barriers. But for other species, even just coming out into a little clearing like this is already something that they will not do. The other thing is when fragments get reduced beyond a certain minimum size, they start to unravel, they start to lose diversity, they start to become very disturbed. This is a forest that's actually kind of in trouble. Climbing plants, they start to take over and they actually can smother the trees. They're probably dead now.
So essentially what we're looking at in front of us is a forest that is slowly dying.
Basically, yeah.
As more of our forests make way for development, the habitats of our wildlife are slowly being chipped away. But these link bridges may hold the solution.
Animals do cross this area. So on our left, we have the nature reserves at Lower Pierce. Then on the right is Thompson Nature Park.
Dr. Adrian Liu leads the NParks Conservation Department, which is tasked to find ways to reconnect our slices of greenery so that wildlife can still cross from patch to patch where the habitats have been disrupted.
In the past, we used a single rope, but we realised that it's a bit too wobbly for them. So you can see that this is like a ladder. So there won't be any break in that connectivity. So in the past, they were actually coming down to the road to cross.
How effective are these link bridges?
We have a camera system up there, and we've seen the Raffles Banded Langur actually use it several times. They're very cute, actually. They're so curious, they are actually touching the camera. So, yeah.
What are some of the other efforts that NParks has taken to connect our forests?
The other big thing is that the EcoLink at BKE, that's a huge effort to actually link Bukit Timah with the Central Catchment Nature Reserve.
This $16 million megastructure, the EcoLink Bridge, spans across the six-lane Bukit Timah Expressway. It aims to tackle another issue of forest fragmentation, roadkill.
Yeah, so this particular one here is on Sembawang Road. We got a report from a member of the public, and when we got there, was pretty bloated. So this palm civet was found in Grange Road. When people are driving around at night, and sometimes they hit large animals like a sambar like this.
Researcher Marcus Chua is a member of the Roadkill Interest Group, a team of people who keep a record of almost every wild animal that is killed on our roads.
What are some of the more common roadkill that are found?
Sunda pangolin, long-tailed macaque, wild pigs, and Asian palm civet. These are the species that are found in forest, parkland or wooded areas and along edge habitats between forested area and, say, the roadside. And if they're moving around, they can fall prey to being hit by vehicles.
So with all this information and data that is collected, what do you then do with it?
We are able to plot where the hotspots are, and then it's this information to have either road communication efforts by road calming measures, fencing or bridges for connectivity.
I've asked him to take me to some of these hotspots.
So are there any other worrying indicators that you're finding in the Roadkill Interest Group?
So we're getting rare threatened species like the leopard cats as roadkill. And for a species like the leopard cat, which we have probably have less than 20 in the whole of the main island of Singapore, one roadkill is a large percentage of the entire population.
It has a big impact on the species.
Yes, it is.
Soon, we approach one of the deadliest roads for Singapore's wild critters. Right here, along the Bukit Timah Expressway, where the EcoLink Bridge is located. You see, this area used to be one large forest, until the Bukit Timah Expressway was built in the 1980s, separating the forest into two fragments. So now, many animals wanting to cross to the other side to find food or to look for mates often end up being roadkill. The EcoLink Bridge has helped to mitigate the problem, but there's only so much one bridge can do on an entire stretch that's more than 2 kilometres long.
Both sides are forest, and notice there is no major barrier along the side, so animals can find their way out pretty easily.
So what does this say about the bridges that we're building then? Are they working?
Well, an animal can't read signs, right? So they won't know that, hey, there is this bridge I should use. The fact that we're still getting roadkills close to the bridge shows that maybe the design could be improved, perhaps by fencing up the site that encourages animals to use the bridge more.
So, these bridges alone won't solve the issue of forest fragmentation. But NParks has taken another approach to link our forests up by planting 1 million more trees all around Singapore over the next 10 years. And they're roping in the community to help in tree planting sessions like these, which today I volunteered myself to be a part of.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Sungai Buloh.
Earlier, I met Adrian, the man in charge of NParks Conservation Department, which also oversees the 1 million trees movement. And I'm getting the privilege of a personal tree planting coaching session from him.
Let me demonstrate. So,
yes,
watch your back. I guess we can do it here.
Ooh.
Maybe not. Okay, so just use the weight of the jungle. And then just flip it up like that. Yeah, so you spread your legs like that.
Oh! I think this is going to take the whole day.
Okay, sounds good.
Sounds
good? Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah.
I'll just observe from now on.
Why have we chosen this site in particular to plant these trees?
So, Fushan, there, it's actually a science-based approach to restoration of forests. This was actually just barren land. Rather than letting weeds set in, right, we are planting native species like the one you see here. They buffer the surrounding forest, right, from very harsh elements. They also provide habitat for a lot of the wild animals here, namely the birds.
How many hectares do you think this 1 million trees will cover?
I can't give you a definite answer, but we are trying to do this on whatever space that is possible. We think about connectivity also. So even along our streetscape, you'll see that there are nature ways that we are planting now. So these birds can actually fly from one forest along our nature corridors into another forest.
Can already, yeah?
Yeah, good job.
While 1 million more trees will be planted over the next decade, more of Singapore's forests will eventually make way for development. One forest in question, Clementi Forest. It's a forest that could be torn down for housing needs in the future. And it became a topic of hot debate after this drone video went viral online. Netizens quickly started a petition to designate this forest as a nature park, and it has gathered almost 20,000 signatories. So today, I'm here with Kwek Yen to see what all the hype is about.
This is such an amazing view.
Yeah, so this is a good example of, you know, the chaos and complexity in a forest. So you have the tall trees, you also have shorter trees, and you have trees that have died, the branches that have fallen.
Today, this is not just a popular hiking spot for members of the public. The forest here is also teeming with many species of threatened and endangered wildlife. So, as more of our wildlife disappear, I find out why some people are desperate to turn back the clock.
If you imagine a day when suddenly all the butterflies disappear, all these other organisms will be deprived of a food source. In turn, they will die out as well and become extinct.
I'm exploring Clementi Forest, a green oasis in the middle of a dense urban neighbourhood.
This is some real forest. It's just trees and trees and trees as far as the eye can see. Oh. Really starting to work up a sweat right now.
And just when I thought it couldn't get any better.
Okay, we need to cross the stream here. Scary!
We've just chanced upon a happy group of trekkers who are really enjoying the forest.
Oh, use your stick! Boy,
stand,
your
boy, stick, boy, side! Oh.
Look how muddy their shoes are. I bet you get on your way.
Good luck.
Gee, I have to say, of all the things I was expecting to find in Clementi Forest, surely wasn't expecting to find a bunch of seniors just having a jolly good time.
Why is it important to conserve areas like these?
People enjoy this forest. Rarely would you be able to take such an exciting walk through the mud, you know. And there are surprises that you can find, right? So a few years ago, colleagues from National Parks Board, they identified that a species of orchid that was thought to be extinct in Singapore. So who knows what other kinds of surprises that you actually might find in these kinds of forests.
So lately there's been a lot of talk of conserving our forests, right? From an ecologist's point of view, where do you find that balance?
I think for me, a reason is once you get to know that there are these plants and animals, and so you know you don't wish to be part of their destruction.
It's precisely the hunt for these surprises that has kept one man setting off into the forests with his camera for the past 30 years. And I've arranged to see the archive of photos he's amassed.
Right, this butterfly is called the banded swallowtail. It's feeding on the flower of lantana.
Look at that, the clarity of that.
Kew Sin Koon is known as Singapore's butterfly man. In this hobby-turned-obsession, he has taken more than 200,000 pictures. And he's photographed all 350 species of butterflies found in Singapore.
This one is called a common lascar. This is a female great mormon, one of our local resident species.
Mr. Q has even written a book on Singapore's butterflies. It's thanks to his efforts that we know Singapore has lost a third of our butterfly species since 1869. And so it's become his mission to make sure that more don't go extinct.
Why does it matter if we lose more species of butterflies?
Butterflies exist functionally in the habitats to do two main things. One is to pollinate flowers. The second is that they are a food source for birds, lizards, even spiders. So if you suddenly imagine a day when suddenly all the butterflies disappear, all these other organisms will be deprived of a food source. And in turn, they will die out as well and become extinct. However, the good news is that because Malaysia is close by, there is a chance for them to come back to Singapore again. Over the last 20 years, there have been several rediscoveries. Species that we thought had gone extinct suddenly appeared again.
One such species is this, the harlequin. It was thought to have gone extinct in Singapore until Mr. Q rediscovered it in the mid-2000s. Today, the harlequin is known only to live in this small forest patch in western Singapore. It's another forest that has been set aside for development, which puts the future of this species in question once again. We're hoping to photograph some today.
Okay, so Mr. Q's just alerted me that he spotted one just off ahead. Is it still there?
Yes, it's still there.
Well, I'm not seeing it. Which leaf is it on?
Right ahead where that sloping branch is, on the right side.
There's like a million leaves and branches here.
It's now facing us. There. Can you see it?
Ah, yes, I see it.
All right. Let's see you try to photograph it.
Okay.
You missed. He went to the next leaf.
Spotting it in person is one thing, but actually trying to take a picture of it is a whole different ballgame altogether, and it's just gone now. Mr. Q, on the other hand, looks like he's really in his element. I can kind of see the draw of this now. I mean, just, you know, disappearing into a green patch of forest and leaving everything else behind and just being super focused on finding a butterfly. See why you like it now.
Efforts to introduce the harlequin into other forests have not been successful so far, but no one understands why. And given that this land is slated for development in the future, this butterfly is another animal that is on NPARC's species recovery list.
I would rather go on the side of prevention, preserve the environment, rather than clear the environment and then try to reintroduce them into a new environment.
So when it comes to conserving butterflies, how important is a place like Singapore?
Singapore is a pretty biodiverse country. as far as butterflies are concerned. For example, we have over 350 species. As compared to a country like the whole of Great Britain, they probably have something like fewer than 100 species. So it matters that we try to conserve as much of our biodiversity as possible.
It's been 2 months since I last saw the critically endangered bulbuls. By now, they're halfway through their mating season. And so far, according to CCTV footage, the birds have laid 2 eggs, and both have hatched. The bird park hopes for 4 to 8 chicks this year. Some of them will be sent to zoos overseas to help with conservation efforts there. All this goes to show that even as a tiny city-state, we can have an impact on saving our planet's wildlife from going extinct. So, if we have so much biodiversity within such a small land area, perhaps there may be even more to discover in the waters that surround us.
There's a good chance they were always around. We just didn't know that they were around.
Time to slide myself down into the sea. Woo! Oh, my God! Big choice!
When we think about biodiversity in Singapore, the first instinct is probably to look at our forests. Rarely would we think about looking underwater. But we actually have half the species of marine life found at the Great Barrier Reef, 250 species of hard corals, more than 100 species of reef fish, and 200 species of sponges. That's a lot for a tiny island. And that's because we're located in between the South China Sea and the Strait of Malacca. And currents from these areas bring in a wealth of marine life. One of these species is a mythical sea creature, the Neptune's cup sponge. The only time most of us would see them today is in our museums. But in the 1800s, they used to be abundant in our waters, until European collectors took them from our seas in droves to the point of extinction. Then, 10 years ago, Karen chanced upon one of them on a dive. Individual sponges have since appeared a few more times, sporadically around our island. Today, she's bringing me to where she's brought some of them closer together in hopes of increasing their numbers.
Just how rare are these sponges? We find these sponges generally on the seafloor area. Over these last 10 years or so, we found another 6 or 8 sponges. Why transplant them? How will this help with species recovery? If they're in close proximity to each other, we believe that that could increase the chances of sexual reproduction when they release their sperms and egg into the waters. We hope that then, by virtue of the hydrodynamics, the fertilized larvae then will be transported. It will move the larvae to other parts of Singapore.
And one of the reasons she's desperate to up their chances of reproduction... On their last dive, they realised that the sponges were being eaten alive. All that remained were stumps. Today, Karen and her team will be heading back underwater to install camera traps to see what's been feeding on these sponges. That is, if there's even anything left of them.
See you! Say hi to the mermaids and the sea turtles!
All I can do is wait. Then, within minutes of descending, she finds out they've grown back. That's the magical thing about these sponges. Even on the brink of near annihilation, they somehow always manage to keep bouncing back.
How do you think the sponges made their comeback in Singapore's waters?
there's a good chance they were always around. We just didn't know that they were around. So if anything, what it shows us is there's still so many things that's happening in our waters that's undiscovered. Conservation of the marine environment really requires us to be aware that we can have an impact on the environment and then find opportunities to make sure that we can minimize that impact and ensure that marine life comes back.
We've transformed our coastline over the years through land reclamation, and in the process, smothered more than half of our coral reefs. We've also destroyed most of our coastal habitats, like mangroves and sandy beaches. Most of our shorelines now look like this. These are seawalls, granite structures that prevent land erosion, but deter marine life from settling on our shores, because not much can survive on these barren walls. The cost of this? Loss of biodiversity. But one man is trying to bring back more life to our seawalls. For the past 5 years, Dr. Tan has experimented with more than 20 different types of corals in search of something resilient enough to survive on our seawalls. And he's finally identified two species, which are our best bet.
So come this way. We have a small little nursery here where we keep our coral fragments.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a really nice one.
Yeah, so these are called bubble coral. We have two species here. One of them is called Porites, which is the ones here. And the other one is called Dipastria, which is the ones here. Mm-hmm. So these are coral fragments that we want to transfer to the intertidal part of the seawalls.
In the marine world, corals are builders of habitat. Coral reefs house nearly a quarter of all ocean species. Millions of creatures, from starfish to crabs, and even sea turtles, live amongst them. Where there are corals, there is life. And that is why, a month ago, Dr. Tan and his team transplanted 40 coral fragments to a seawall on St. John's Island. It's the first ever attempt in Singapore. And over the past 5 years, they've faced numerous challenges trying to get the coral fragments out here. Because corals typically live on the sea floor, so they're used to being underwater. Out here, too much sun exposure could cause them to bleach, and the waves could knock them off the seawalls. Today, I'll be joining Dr. Tan to check on the corals. It's the first time he's seeing them since they were transplanted. It's anyone's guess whether they're still alive.
Feeling a bit like a Teletubby right now. Time to slide myself down into the sea. Woo! Oh my God! Big choice!
I may not have been able to handle the environment down there, but for the corals, almost all 40 of them that were transplanted a month ago had survived. Some did fall off, so we took the opportunity to replace them with new coral fragments.
With a few cuts and bruises, but I'm alive. And there were moments I felt like I was really, woof, really felt the force of the sea. It really makes me appreciate the kind of work that they do a lot more. What are some of the bigger implications that you're hoping this project can achieve?
The seawalls form a huge component now on the coastline of Singapore. So I think it will be a waste, really, if we don't use these seawalls to increase biodiversity. We also want to go on and transplant other organisms like sponges, soft coral, and maybe even ascidians.
While Dr. Tan's team is trying to use coral fragments to attract marine wildlife to our southern island seawalls, back on the mainland, another team is using a different approach.
Ooh! Got it.
Nice catch.
Okay, that's good. Enough already.
Peter is hoping that these towels, designed by Australian scientists at the Sydney Institute of Marine Science, will provide pockets of habitat for marine life around our seawalls.
What's the issue with our current seawalls? Why isn't it a conducive environment for marine life to thrive?
The seawall we have here is very steep. It's made out of granite. We've got lots of rock oysters. We've got snails, limpets, but it's not very biodiverse. And that's something that we can change, is by retrofitting these tiles.
OK, so shall we get to it then?
Sure. So first of all, we've got to get the tiles up the rope and leaning against the wall. Pass the drill to Shushan.
Oh, you want me to drill?
I do want you to drill. Put the point into the hole.
I have to say, before I start, I've never actually used a drill before.
That's
though.
Fine. Ah, oh, well done. Excellent.
I feel like I'm getting too much praise for a simple task.
Very good.
So we're done with this towel?
Pretty much.
How will these tiles encourage more marine life to come back?
One of the main ways is that we're offering microhabitats. So in here, we'll get water, and then when the water comes in, we can expect animals like snails and crustaceans, such as crabs, to come and live in there. So if we can double the number of species that are here already, that'd be great. If we can triple the number of species, even better. Personally, I would like that on every seawall, you would see this. We'd love to see Singaporeans coming to seawall areas and see the marine life there, which has been enhanced by these type of structures.
And that's precisely why Peter has chosen to install the tiles here. This marina is also a place where tours are conducted.
Okay, hi everyone. Welcome to MKB, Marina at Keppel Bay. I'm Elvin. He's David. We'll be your guides today.
We're here to see the marine life that has formed underneath these pontoons.
There's actually a brain coral over here.
Ooh, brain coral?
Yeah, brain coral.
Whoa. Perhaps sometimes, that's the only way to get people to care, to make them see it. Because seeing is believing. I guess it's just in our nature.
You just have to look very hard. I think some of you can see small little dots moving around in the water. Those are baby fishes.
But if there's one takeaway from my journey of discovering Singapore's wildlife, it's this. Just because we don't see it, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
There's actually so much around us and so much more we could find if we're only willing to open our eyes to them.
And maybe, just maybe, if we're more aware of the wildlife that live amongst us, we might just take a little more care to make sure they have a place in our tiny home, in one way or another.